Hey guys, real quick before we jump into this next episode, I want to discuss something with you. I made a decision a couple of years ago not to bombard this podcast with tons of ads or just bombard you with sponsorship. Nothing would drive me more crazy when listening to other podcasts when the first 5 minutes were nothing but ads. So I worked hard not to do that to you. I try to keep the ads to a minimum and keep the podcast as streamlined as possible. So do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Buy yourself a bag. Up your shooting game. You're going to thank me. And if you're not a rifle hunter, go buy yourself a glassing pad. Your butt is going to thank me after spending hours behind the glass. They're awesome. If you use promo code John Stallone, all one word, you'll save 20%. And lastly, please, I know you heard me say it, iTunes, Podbean, go leave us a review. I need the feedback. The ratings help me reach more people, and it helps me keep this free. So do me a favor, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, and go leave us a review. Thank you. Let's roll into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to do a little storytelling session. We're going to talk with Jason Segmiller and hear some of his hunting stories. So, what's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, John. It's good to chat with you, finally.
Yeah. You know, we've been trying to put this together for a little bit.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out to me. I'm kind of that busy time of year for you, I know for sure, and for me as well, so glad we could make it happen.
Yeah, every time hunting season rolls around, it gets a little harder and harder to get people on. It's so funny because, like, February to about May, I could just crank out podcast after podcast, but then as soon as excuse me, people start like scouting and doing that kind of stuff, it gets a lot harder to coordinate.
Yeah, I'm sure people are so in and out with work and being out in the hills and everything else. So it's,
yeah, that's pretty nuts.
Anyways, I'm excited to be here today. Hopefully we can have a good chat.
Yeah, for sure. So why don't you give us a quick rundown about yourself? Then we'll get to it.
Yeah, you bet. So, like you mentioned, my name's Jason Segmiller. If anybody follows me on Instagram, my Instagram handle is @OutdoorSeg. I'm pretty much a mule deer fanatic. I grew up in southern Utah, kind of in the desert country. That's what I love to hunt the most, is mule deer down in the lower desert country. But I cut my teeth really with my uncle, my dad, my cousins, just mule deer hunting. Mainly we did some, you know, some predator hunting, some upland game and other things like that, but it was primarily mule deer, and I caught the bug early on, and it hasn't stopped. I do love to hunt elk and other types of big game as well, but I definitely have to say mule deer is my passion. I now live in northern Utah. I've lived several places around the country.
Nice.
On different military assignments, but we're back in Utah now, but more in northern Utah. If anybody follows my Instagram page, I live pretty close to Antelope Island.
Yeah,
it's famous island there. And it's just the place I go real quick from my house to go get my big mule deer fix.
Yeah, you try to do that shed hunt every year, don't you?
I do the shed hunt out there every year if they pull my name out.
Yeah,
I've been following some of those bucks out there for some of them up to 7-8 years now.
Wow, that's crazy. You have to go out, you have to show up right that day or whatever. How does it work?
So yeah, shed hunting on Antelope Island itself is pretty limited. They limit it to 2 days a year.
Mm-hmm. And like 100 people. And
they let 100 people the first day go on the east side of the island, and then 100 people the second day on the west side of the island.
Okay, yeah.
So the way they do it now is you show up at this big parking lot, you put your name in the hat, and they draw the first 100 names, and as soon as you get your name picked, you can take off and go.
Sweet.
So it's a rat race, and it's more and more popular. So it's no guarantee you're going to get your name drawn out. But
Still sounds.
Anyways, that's me right now. I work full time as a clinical social worker, actually, at the Veterans Hospital here in Salt Lake City. I manage a program here for those veterans that are just transitioning from the military into civilian life and into our VA healthcare system, and help them get set up with the appropriate mental health care, medical care, whatever it might be. And I'm still in the military on the National Guard side now. I'm what the military calls a behavioral health officer.
Okay.
Used to be a military intelligence officer, and that's what's taken me places around the country and around the world, and it's good to be back here pretty permanently now in Utah.
Nice. So, let me ask you this. On the Antelope Island thing, because you only get the day, so what do? You kind of just go out there and you know where the deer are at, and you just kind of, you know, go for it
it's a big island. It actually is 42 square miles. People don't know that. Wow. And it's a lot more rugged and vast than some people think, especially on the west side of the island. But if you've done your homework, I guess you could have glassed throughout the winter time prior to shed time to find out where the deer were congregated. But there's a lot of areas on the island that you just can't see from roads or trails. And unless you're doing the shed hunt, you always have to stay on designated trails or roads out there. And so a lot of it's, if you're one of the early names picked, you can take off and you can go hit those areas that you've seen deer congregated, that you know deer hang out during the shedding time. Otherwise, it's just strapping up your boots and putting on as many miles as you can and covering ground and hoping you find them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys that you'll get out there 7:30 in the morning and they'll stay till dark and put on as many miles as they can. And other people, it starts to get warm midday and they haven't found much and they, you know, they give up. It's just whatever you decide to do. You have the whole day for access if your name is drawn out of the hat.
Gotcha. Did you draw any good tags this year, or you got
so
any?
So we have.
It's planned.
I have a mule deer tag here in southern Utah where I grew up. That's still where I do most of my hunting here in the state of Utah. It's the state of Utah, we call it a dedicated hunter permit. Mm-hmm. So I can hunt all three seasons. I can hunt the archery, muzzleloader, and now there's actually two different rifle seasons. So
wow.
I've banked most of my vacation days for the rifle hunts coming up here in October. I'll also probably try to make it down for some days on the muzzleloader hunt. So I have that tag. I do have a general elk tag here in the state of Utah, as well as my daughter lucked out and drew a youth elk permit here in the state of Utah this year. So we're going to actually be out next week.
Nice.
Trying to get her a bull.
Now the youth, that's a general hunt too, right? You can use a rifle or any weapon at that point.
Correct. Yeah. What they do here in Utah is if you're under the age of 18, you can put in for these youth permits. And every year it seems there's 7,000 to 8,000 youth that put in for these permits, and they draw, I believe it's 450. And so if they get their name picked, they can hunt any of the general open bull units about 2 weeks prior than the rest of the general elk hunters. So right now,
it's awesome.
Right during the rut and some good dates and very little pressure. So it's going to be fun.
Oh yeah, that sounds good, man. So I have you on today to talk about some of your past experiences, and hopefully, you know, there's some takeaways, some learning experiences from those moments, or, you know, just just a good old story that keeps people interested. So I guess I'll let you have at it. Share with us one of your stories.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'll start with a mule deer story, just because that kind of leads me into, I guess, an elk story where I killed my biggest bull. But I had, here in the state of Utah, just like many states, you have to accumulate points as you put in for the draws every year and don't draw out. And I had accumulated quite a few points a few years back. This was, I think, back 2014. And I decided to use my points to go and hunt on this unit in southern Utah that we call a CWMU, or a Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit. These are parcels of big parcels of public land or private land that the landowner contracts with the state to allow a certain number of public hunters to come on their property to hunt, in exchange for the state giving them a number of permits that they can then turn around and sell for profit.
Right.
And so I used my points on one of these units, in an area that I know pretty well, and I know there's good bucks there. In fact, it's right near the Ponsagant unit, famous Ponsagant unit down in southern Utah. And
nice.
And so I was excited about that, and the operator of the ranch there, he let me pick some dates, and I chose to come down in mid-October, and I had my brother and my good friend Nick with me. And the cool thing about this hunt, and also the challenging thing, is it's a migratory type area. So deer coming out of the high country at that time, migrating down into the lower country where they spend the winter. And so you get to look at new deer every single day. It just seemed like more and more were making it down onto this property. And so we'd hunted for 4 days. I passed on a lot of solid bucks, up to 160, 170 type bucks. And we'd seen one real good buck that had a giant 3x4 frame, probably went in the 190s as a 3x4 frame. And so I was holding out for a buck like that, because I still had a handful of days left to hunt. And but after our fourth day, my brother and my friend, they both had to leave, get back to work and to some family obligations. And so I was on the unit there by myself for a couple of days. And there was one evening I was still hunting in the area where we'd seen the big buck, that I decided to set up in this area where I knew the deer were coming down to water. And I'd set back up in the concealment and waited. And sure enough, right about 15 minutes before legal shooting light ended, this buck starts to come down the hill in front of me, and he stops right on this little tiny hill, and he's silhouetted for me as the light's starting to go away. And so I'm looking at him through my binoculars, and I can see he has a pretty nice frame, but then I also saw on both sides, it looked like multiple extras coming out on both sides. And I thought, you know what, this is a cool, unique, non-typical buck. I'm going to take him. And so I shot. He goes right down. I'm excited. I run over there. Well, probably a fast walk, but I zoom over there. It was about 200 yards away. And I see him on the ground, and my heart just absolutely sank when I realized this was a stag buck. And in mid-October was starting to shed velvet. And so the extra points I thought I saw.
Oh, geez.
Strips of velvet. And he was just a nice 3-point frame buck. I passed, I don't even know how many bucks much bigger than him. And so I sat there in the dark, and I got the deer, and I had a 4-wheeler with me, and no joke, it took me a half an hour by myself. The deer did have this giant body, and it took me a half an hour by myself to get him on my 4-wheeler.
Jeez.
I don't know how many times I got half his body up there, and thinking I've got it, and he slips off and rolls off. So it was just one of those circus situations where I'm bummed about the buck that I killed. I'm by myself. It's dark. I'm tired. I'm thirsty. And now I'm spending 30 minutes. You know, finally I would get part of him up there, and I'd tie him down with some rope, and then I'd try to launch the other body up. Anyways, I got him out, and it took me a while to recover from that. So I think there's definitely a good lesson there. And that lesson is if you are looking for a certain type of animal, you need to make sure, you need to spend the time to analyze it enough to where you don't make a mistake, because it's so easy to do. You did it once yourself?
I did, yeah. So two years ago, I drew a late season rifle tag here in a unit. And I never, ever put in for mule deer when I put in for rifle. I put in for coos deer when I put in for rifle tags.
Okay.
Because I typically hunt mule deer here during archery season.
Right.
Anyway, but I'm like, you know what? I have a really good chance to draw this December tag. It's a rut tag, or at least the beginning of the rut anyhow. And every year I hunt that unit with the bow, I see giants, like, you know, are giants to me anyway.
Just out of Drake.
You know, good 180, 190 bucks. And I'm always thinking to myself, oh shit, if I had a rifle right now, this would just be, it'd be done, you know? So I put in, I draw, and I'm excited. And I hunt, and the tag goes from like December 13th to the 31st. And usually the rut, or like the real action, doesn't kick in until after Christmas. So, but I hunted every day leading up to Christmas. And I only had, let's see, I only had the day after Christmas to hunt. So like the prime days after Christmas, I was going away with my family, so I wasn't going to be able to hunt. So I hunted every day up to Christmas, and I had passed up, you know, like 150. I actually even had a buck that was right there on that 160 that on the first morning that I was really contemplating whether or not to shoot. But I was like, dude, you know, it's a 160 buck. You got a rifle. You can, you know, you could do better. You could find, you know, one of these 180, 190 bucks. Anyway, so I pass all these deer, and then the last morning, nobody's available to go with me, and I go out by myself. And now I'm just like, I go to a completely different area, because the area that I had been hunting, I'm just not turning up. I'm turning up like 130 bucks, you know, 140 bucks, like nothing I want to shoot with a rifle. Right. And I get out there, and at first light, I catch a glimpse of this buck, like chasing a doe through the a mesquite bottom that was below me. And I was like, oh, you know, he looks pretty good. So I kind of lose him, and now it gets a little bit lighter, and all of a sudden I see this doe pop out in the same area, and sure as shit, here comes this buck out from underneath her. And I took a look at him, and I'm like, well, it's my last morning to hunt. I'm not going to be able to hunt tonight. So this is the last chance. I'm like, good buck. You know, I said to myself, I literally looked at him for like 30 seconds, not even.
Right.
And I'm like, good buck. I run over, grab my rifle. I lay it down right there. I'm 720 yards away from him. Get my Phoenix shooting bag set up. I get my phone scope set up on him real quick, but I'm still not even looking at him. I'm just getting everything set up. And I'm not like looking at him through the binos. I don't have a spotter on him or anything like that. Put the phone scope on, hit record, jump on the rifle, get in the scope, find him, boom, smack, drop him right there. I'm like, all right, cool. And then, like, I walked up on him, and I swear to God, I mean, if he's 110 inches, I would be, maybe 120 inches, maybe. I'd be surprised. And it's crazy because you look at him in the video at first when he first gives you the look right before I shoot him. He looks like a big frame deer. But
right.
It's a young, narrow, like 3-point with eye guards. And he's just – I was so devastated. I didn't even post a picture. I told everybody I ate my tag. I was so like, I was, and I'm not like that. I don't usually get ashamed of deer. You know, I really am against people who've talked down a boy. Well, why'd you shoot that little guy or whatever? It's bullshit. You take whatever you want to take and whatever makes you happy. Exactly. What I was ashamed of was the situation that I fucking made a mistake, you know? actually,
the whole way you're walking over there, you're just thinking of what it might be, right? You're just thinking, man, that looked good in the scope. And
yeah,
I was thinking, oh, I can't wait to see what these extras look like when I get over there. And it's just sickening. And I've learned my lesson. I've had moments since then. I had one moment last year, in fact. I was hunting with a muzzleloader, and I had a deer going up the ridge in front of me, and I knew he was a big frame buck, but I still had, you know, I still had different rifle seasons after that I could hunt, and so I was being a little bit selective. I'm old enough now where I don't feel like I have to kill a deer anymore. I usually have some kind of cow, elk, or other animal that I can fill the freezer with, and so I'm pretty selective with the deer I kill anymore. And this buck was going up the ridge and he was moving. And I said, man, he looks really good. His backs are big, but I thought his front forks were a little weak, his G4s. And he finally gets on the ridge in front of me on the skyline. And when he turns on the skyline and he's moving, getting ready to disappear out of sight, I realize that he has, you know, those G4s that kind of parallel the beam. Mm-hmm. And they were plenty long. They were probably 11 inches. And this buck would have been well over 180. And the type of buck I was ready to shoot. But because I've learned that lesson, I've become a little gun shy. It's paid off sometimes. But then, you know, sometimes I wait too long to know exactly what I'm looking at, and then when I do realize how big a buck is, it might be out of sight or out of range.
Yeah.
But you do got to really, if you don't want to make that mistake and you do have some kind of a goal in mind, or at least want to kill a solid buck, you do kind of have to qualm some of that buck fever that you have going on inside, because you jump a buck and he looks big going away. It's real easy to just make that instantaneous decision and put him down, and you might end up like I was and like you were when you get up to him.
Yeah, I was just devastated, like absolutely devastated, because there was no way in hell that anybody would have ever looked at this deer and said, that's a big deer. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it.
Right.
I mean, I must have literally just saw horns and be like, okay, buck, I'm going to shoot it. That's how quickly I looked at him.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, when I walked up to my buck and realized what he was, I mean, it's a type of buck that I pass up a dozen or more of this size of buck every year on my general hunt.
Yeah.
You know, and here I had burned, you know, double-digit points to get this tag.
Wow.
And, but it was...
That's rough.
It was a good lesson learned. And it does kind of lead me to my next story, because if I hadn't used my points that year, this next story wouldn't have happened. And that's the biggest bull that I've killed. And I killed a bull that went in the 360s the following year. So the state of Utah, they only allow, when you're a resident, they only allow you to put in for one limited entry species every year. So right. You have to choose between deer and elk, and then once you draw, in my instance I drew the deer tag, then you're on a waiting period, so you can't put back in for that species for a designated number of years. And so I had burned my deer points. I only had one. I had saved up I think 2 points I had previous years I applied for elk, and so I decided to put in for elk. And I chose a unit here in the state. It's called the Wasatch unit, where there's a lot of elk, but they give out a lot of tags. So it is a limited entry unit, but they don't manage it for, you know, real old bulls like they do some of our other units in the state. And I thought, well, my best odds with this low number of points is probably this unit. So I put in for a muzzleloader permit on this Wasatch unit.
Uh-huh.
And somehow with 2 points, I draw the tag. And I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it. And I thought, well, I got to go figure out how to kill a big bull. And so that's why I say, if I hadn't burned my deer points, this elk hunt never would have happened. But when I knew I had the tag, I started spending a lot of time that summer scouting some different areas. And I found a lot of elk. I found some nice bulls that I would have been happy with. 320, 330, up to 340 type bulls. In this unit, I mean, most people will tell you, if you see a bull that's over 320, 330, even though it's limited entry, you better be shooting it, because there's just not a lot of bulls that are bigger. There are some, but, you know, they kind of manage it for that 320, 330 class bull. And so I had these bulls found, and I had gone back, and every week they were there. In fact, 2 weeks prior to my hunt, they were there. But as we all know, it starts to get closer to the rut, and those bulls, they move out of some of those areas, and they're out looking for cows.
Right.
So my buddy and I, the dates were perfect. I think my hunt started on September 21st. This is in 2015. Mm-hmm. And my buddy and I show up a couple of days prior, and we spend 2 days in the area I've scouted and all the surrounding areas and the basins there. And we only turned up one bull in 2 days. And so I thought, man, what are we going to do? Where are we going to be on opening day? But luckily, I had a backup plan. And that might be the lesson out of this story, is to make sure you have at least a plan B and hopefully a plan C.
And D.
And D and whatever else, because you never know what's going to go down. And my backup plan, fortunately, when I drew the tag, I had a good friend. He passed away a year ago. His name was Larry Maurer. He was in a wheelchair from a motorcycle accident many years prior. But he loved those bucks out on Antelope Island. That was kind of his therapy, and he loved big mule deer. And so he and I would go out there quite frequently to check out the bucks. And a friend of his, in talking with Larry, mentioned, hey, I know your friend Jason has that Wasatch tag. Mm-hmm. And I've been out there on the rifle hunt the week before the muzzleloader hunt starts. And there's this one big bull that we kept seeing, but we could never kill on our rifle hunt. And you think Jason would be interested in knowing some information about this bull? And so Larry hits me up, and I said, oh man, I'd love to know the information. So I went down and I sat down with Larry and this guy, his name was Clint. Clint shares all these Google Earth place marks about where he saw the bull every single day of the rifle hunt, where he thinks he beds, where he thinks he might water. And he gives me all this information. Mm-hmm. And so I had that in my back pocket. You know, I was still going to stick with the area I knew, the area I'd scouted, was familiar with. But after that, didn't pan out, and we showed up those 2 days and didn't find hardly any elk. We decided to move clear across the unit to this spot that Clint had shared with me. My buddy and I pull in, we set up camp, we hike up to a ridge about an hour before dark. This is the night before opening day. Mm-hmm. And we just had bulls going crazy in every direction, every drainage, every thick patch of pine, everywhere.
Nice.
We had bulls everywhere, so we knew that was at least a good sign. So the next morning, we're back on that same glassing point where we had spent the night before. And immediately, in this probably 300 yards to our right in this drainage, there was this really thick section of pines. And this nasty, deep, raspy sounding bull was just going nuts in those pines. And so we didn't know exactly which bull it was, but he sounded like one that would be worth having a look at. And so my friend starts to call. We start moving closer. Every time we called, he would roar back, and we were just starting to get in the pines, probably 100 yards from the bull, and all of a sudden two shots rang out like 5 to 10 seconds apart. Huh. This is a muzzleloader hunt, and so I was just floored. Like, we didn't know anybody else was up there. Mm-hmm. We don't know how he shot two times in 5 or 10 seconds. And my only thought is he probably had a backup rifle that somebody handed him after the first shot.
Right.
But we didn't even waste our time to go up there and see what they killed. You know, I was just hoping it wasn't the big bull that we were, you know, hoping to find in that area. So we continue on down the canyon. We're chasing other bugles, going after other elk we'd spotted. We had a 300 class 6-point walk right by us at 40 yards, as we called. You know, I could have shot him easily, but it was first day. I had a whole week off work, and so we gave him the pass. And then about 8:30 in the morning, everything just went dead silent because we had unseasonably hot temperatures that year. I mean, it was up pretty high elevation. It was getting 75, 78 degrees in late September. And everything just shut up completely. And by this point, we're almost 3 miles from our camp, and we didn't want to go back. And so I looked at the maps. I said, there's a water hole down here that we'd heard about. And I said, let's just go sit this water hole during the day. What do we have to lose? You know, we can go rest in the shade and wait till things get back going in the evening time and go from there. Mm-hmm. And so my friend and I, we set up on the edge of this tree line about 135 yards from this water hole. And we waited 5-6 hours. We ate lunch. We took turns taking naps, and just nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. But about 4 p.m., this younger 6-point bull comes in and wallows right there in front of us for 15 minutes or so.
Nice.
And so we just watched him, and so we thought, well, let's keep our eyes out, see what's going to happen. And we did notice the whole while he's sitting there wallowing right in front of us, he kept looking nervously up on the hill and the ridge to our left. And so we kept glassing up there and looking and looking, and finally this younger bull just bolts. I mean, takes off on a dead run out of the water hole. And we're like, man, that's weird. What's going on? And we look up on the ridge to our left where he had been looking, and the bull I end up killing comes out of the trees.
Oh, nice.
And he's at about 250 yards at this point. At this point in time in Utah, you had to have a 1-power scope on your muzzleloader.
Okay.
They changed that the following year where they allow higher magnification on your muzzleloader rifles. But that year I had a 1-power scope. 200, 250 was kind of my max range with that 1-power scope, where I felt like I could ethically kill a bull.
Right.
And so he starts coming down the hill towards the water hole. So we're going to let him come as far as he'll come down. And at one point when he's about 200 yards, he turns and he starts to look like he's going to leave. And it was tempting to try to take a shot on him, but I figured he was moving. He was not at a range where I felt 100% comfortable. And so I held off. But thankfully, he circled back, and he finishes coming all the way down the hill, all the way up to the edge of the water. And I'm ready with my rifle rested across my pack. And as soon as he takes the first sip, you know, I let him have it right in the shoulder, right through the heart area. And it hits him just perfect. And he, unlike a lot of elk you see that are hit, he leaps up like a deer does when they're heart shot. Just kicks his hind legs and then dumps, you know, 5-8 feet out into the water hole.
Oh,
and just kicks around and dies.
Oh.
And, you know, so we're pumped up. We're high-fiving. We're excited. But the whole while I'm walking up to this bull, I knew he was a shooter bull. I didn't have time to count points. I knew he was the type of bull on that unit I need to be shooting. And I couldn't get out of my head the thought, you know, how am I going to get this bull out of the water? There's two of us. I kept thinking, you know, this is only a 135-yard walk, but I'm thinking, man, we've seen some sheep herders up here that have horses. Maybe we can hire one of them to come pull it out for us. I don't know what we're going to do, but we get up to the edge of the water, and it wasn't until that point, as I got a closer look at the parts of the antlers that were sticking out of the water, that I realized it was that exact bull that this guy Clint had shared with me and Larry.
Nice.
That the bull that we were coming into that area hoping to find during that week that I had off, it was that bull. And I just couldn't believe it. You know, how lucky is that to
That's crazy.
Have him come into water while we're sitting there, while the rifle hunters the week before tried to kill him for a week straight and never got a shot at him. You know, and you should have seen the mess we had when we basically dropped our drawers and hopped in the water. And oh, we started tugging on that thing. Luckily, there was some nasty, slimy, just disgusting mud and moss that was down there below the surface that was, you know, somewhat slippery. And it took us a good, I don't know how long. I bet you it was at least, felt like 30, but it was probably 15 or 20 minutes that we were pulling, and we were getting him to move an inch or two at a time. And finally, we got him up and out of the water and on the shore. Just out of the water where we could process him and, you know, quarter, debone and get him ready to pack out. Nice. And so we packed him out that night. I think we got back to camp about 1 a.m. and the whole way back to camp was just through thick deadfall, just nasty uphill climb back to camp. And, you know, we'd taken as much meat as we could. We left the rest of the meat hanging, and we left the antlers. When we got back to camp, I was studying some maps again in Google Earth and realized there was a really old forest road that was going to put us about a quarter mile away. And the next morning, we were able to circle around, and it was a, you know, a 10-minute walk down the hill and back out with the rest of the meat and the antlers. So we killed ourselves getting out of there. I guess that adds to the experience.
For sure.
But that, I have that, my friend was lucky enough to, you know, just with his own video camera, capture that bull coming down the hill and me shooting the bull. I have it out there on YouTube for anyone to see. But it's, I think the link to that video is in my bio on my Instagram page. But it's quite an experience to be able to kill a bull of that caliber on our plan B, you know?
Right.
I guess that's the lesson, is to have that plan B in your back pocket. And as you mentioned earlier, probably a C and a D and something else too.
Yeah. The best laid plans, you know?
Right. Right. I don't feel like it had anything to do with my skill, you know, as far as being able to kill that bull. It was just being in the right place where we knew he could be. And, you know, I think we were smart to sit water on a hot day like that. But, I mean, just pure luck that it was that bull out of all the bulls that were in that area, that he's the one that came in, you know. And
yeah, that's all. I'm actually watching it right now as I'm listening to you.
Are you?
Yeah.
You'll hear my friend Nick. I mean, it was hilarious. He and I were both excited as this bull comes down, but you can hear him trying to give me advice and tell me to stay calm. And I'm thinking in my head, you know, I'm good. You know, you stay calm. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's a stud bull, man. Congrats.
Pretty cool experience. Yeah, he went like 363 is what he went. And I mean, I was happy as could be on that unit. You know, that's an upper end. There's always a few bulls every year come out of that unit that are bigger, but that's an upper end type bull on that Wasatch unit.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you were talking about it and how you heard the two shots and everything. I had drew it in 17.
I drew a manti bull tag.
Yeah.
And I was hunting with the bow during the rifle, during the rifle season, and I was dropping in on this target bull that we had glassed up, and just an absolute slob, you know, probably 380-ish type bull, you know.
Yeah.
Just a big son of a bitch. And I was closing in on his bugles, bugling back to me, and I'm, you know, I'm challenging him and everything, and I'm trying to cut the distance, and I'm probably about 100, maybe 150 yards from them about this point. And all of a sudden, I hear boom, 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 five shots. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And then everything shut up, and I'm like, that son of a, they shot that bull, man. Those other guys shot that bull, and I hadn't seen anybody that morning, but, you know, I'm like, oh, well, that's good for them, you know? So I pulled out of there thinking that bull was dead, and I never saw a sight of him again, or really never heard his bugle again. And then eventually I shot my bull, which ended up being a good bull. We get my bull out to the top, pack him out that night, and get it right before light, last light, whatever. And my buddy's like, hey, I'm just going to glass. He glasses across the canyon. And there's the bull that we were after. The one that I thought got shot was just laying there. Just bedded down across the canyon. I was like, you got to be shitting.
Of course, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't disappointed, though. My bull was a nice bull, but I mean, I would have much rather.
I've had a few stories like that where I think I'm going to kill a buck or an elk. Somebody shoots it out from under me. That's just,
yeah,
that's gut wrenching, you know, especially if it's the bull you're after.
Yep.
In your case, these guys were probably 600 yards away, just lobbing in on this bull.
Yeah. I don't know. They sounded pretty close, man. I don't understand. They were shooting five times. Like, I'm like, man, that just doesn't sound right. Like, you know, what the freak are you shooting?
Excited.
Is that bad? I mean, I don't know. Is he running? I mean, it just didn't make sense. Cause I put the bull at like I said, like 150, and I felt like they were probably just beyond that. I mean, it's kind of hard.
Yeah, they should have had a good shot then if that was the case.
Yeah. I feel like they were shooting probably 100 yards through the bull. You know, again, I'm just guessing yardages. I didn't see them, and I didn't see the bull once I dropped down into the Quakies. I never saw the bull. So, it was like one of those things. I was like, oh, he's dead. Oh, he gone, you know.
Not going to be back in here looking for him anymore.
Yeah.
Did you kill the bull with a bow then?
No. So here's a funny thing. So the night before, I went in on the bull that I killed. I stalked him with my bow the night before. We found them from across the canyon. And it took me forever to get where he was at. Well, by the time I got there, I ran out of light. I had him at like 80 yards, and I just didn't have the light to shoot him. So very next night, fast forward to the very next night, he's in the same spot. We're glassing from the same spot. It's the same time. And I'm like, F this shit. I'm taking the rifle. It's a rifle tag. I'm taking the rifle. I only have tomorrow to hunt anyway, so screw it. Taking the rifle. Well, I guess because I had already gotten over there and I knew how to get there and I knew what, I got there with plenty of time. I slipped in on this bull and shot him at 60 yards with my rifle.
Wow.
I could have killed him with the bow.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I ended up killing him with the rifle.
Props to you for even being out there with the bow during that rifle season, because, man, there's a lot of people that would agree with me when I say that Utah kind of does it wrong for the archery hunters.
Oh, hell yeah. That's terrible.
They get the early dates, pre-rut, hot August, and then you give the rifle hunters the prime rut dates, yeah, followed by the muzzleloader hunters.
Yeah, it's
just crazy how Utah's done that.
Kind of a shitty situation, but... You know, it was a fun. I had a lot of opportunities on some, you know, 320-ish type bulls, and, you know, great bulls. But I didn't wait 9 years to draw the tag to go shoot a 320 bull, you know.
That's right.
But yeah, it was a, you know what though, I gotta say, it was probably one of the most intense ruts that I had ever experienced in the elk woods. I mean, it was just nonstop bugles all day long, just high concentration. I mean, I knew where the elk were because I hunt that unit for deer.
Right.
During the general season. And I had 3 years of the last 3 years I had been hunting it. And I was actually there that year for deer and had shot a deer also. I knew where the high concentration of cows were, so I knew where the bulls were going to be. And man, it was just, they were just fired up. It didn't take much. I mean, you could slam a car door and get a freaking bull to bugle, you know? That's how crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're hoping for when you draw a tag like that.
Right. It's almost a little too much, though, because you're like, oh, dude, there's one this way, there's one this way, there's one this way. But which one do you go for? Which one sounds bigger? I know guys think they know what they, you know, I've heard bulls that sound like the biggest little pussy bulls ever, and they're giants. And
yeah, I don't think you can always determine that by the bugle.
Yeah, I mean, you know when you hear a deep throaty one and it's a big bull, it's not usually the other way around. It's just like rubs. Right. You know, big bulls will make small rubs, but small bulls won't make big rubs, and same thing with deer. But yeah. The same thing with the bugle thing, too. But, you know, they all sound about the same down there, and it's just like, you know, just echoing all over the place, and you're running around in circles. Which way do I go, you know?
Spreading yourself too thin, huh?
Yeah. But, no, it was an amazing hunt, man. I dream about hunting like that every year. I wish I could. You know?
Well, I'm crossing my fingers that next week my daughter can have at least a little bit of that kind of action.
Yeah, it should be getting good now, you know?
Yeah, I think we're going to spend most of our time down. I actually have a military training that week, and so I'm going to be able to take her out when I'm done with my training for the day and then on the weekend after my training's over. So
nice.
We're going to be down in southern Utah, sometimes they rut down there in that warmer country a little bit later, but I have heard that they're starting to pick up down there.
Nice. Yeah, I leave Saturday for Oregon.
Oh, nice.
I'll hunt some rosies.
Nice. I'm
excited about that. I have yet to kill a rosie, so should be
perfect dates then.
I'm not being super picky, but I'm gonna be happy. I think I'm gonna get one this year. I have a good feeling.
Good deal.
So
anyway. I've heard on your other podcast you've had chances on them, right? You just
last year I shot one. I hit him low in the brisket, and we tracked him for a long ways. He bled a lot, and then he just, you know, he stopped. I was kind of hoping I'd catch up with him and try to get another one in him, but never happened. I had another one last year at like 50 yards, and he was walking like the slowest walk ever, and I probably should have taken the shot because I've made that shot a million times in my life, but I didn't. So I had a couple opportunities last year. And then the very first time, that was my second time going. My first time was in Washington, and I passed a bull the very first night. I had a bull that, I mean, I considered a raghorn, and I really didn't know any better until I got back to camp and showed everybody the video, and everybody yelled at me and told me I was a freaking idiot for letting that bull go. But I mean,
it was the Rocky Mountain bulls, huh?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, if that bull had 190 inches, he was, I'm giving him something, you know? And yeah. I don't know. I'm like, we hunt mule deer that size, you know. It's like I didn't know. I knew that 260 was Pope and Young, so I was kind of hoping somewhere, you know, between the 240 to 280 range, you know. I didn't know that you just, you know, brown is down, you know, just shoot it. If I would have done
that. Some of those over the counter units are, that's probably what it will be for my daughter next week. If you know, if it's a raghorn that comes in first, that's probably what she's gonna shoot at.
Yeah. And you know what? For kids, who cares? You know?
She hasn't killed an elk before, so
Let him get the experience. She'll be happy. You'll be happy.
Yeah, so that bull I killed, that was actually, it wasn't the biggest bodied elk that I'd ever killed before. A couple of years before that, I had a cow permit on another one of these ranches, these private ranches, in late December. And, you know, so I was just going up to get some meat to fill my freezer. And the snow was deep. It was like 3 feet deep. And we kept finding nothing but bulls. This is my friend Nick and I again. And we're just driving and we're glassing and we're hiking here and there. And finally, I glassed up a bull half a mile from the truck down across this huge steep canyon. And I said, well, let's just go peek in the canyon to see if we can find any more elk, see if there happens to be a cow in there. I wasn't expecting much because, you know, and the bulls are usually congregated together at that point. And we get over there, and sure enough, there's this herd of 9-10 bulls, and they're all just bedded there. And they're 500 yards across the canyon, and we start glassing, and before long, they kind of notice that we're there, and they start moving their way up the hillside. The very lead animal was this, you know, we look at it and we're like, that looks like a cow. You know, we couldn't see any antlers at all. But I just remember this huge, just this giant belly and brisket just kind of like bouncing as this elk is running up the hill. And so here I am set up on the rifle. And I'm asking my friend, is that a cow? Is that a cow? And he's like, yeah, man, I can't see any antlers at all. And so I said, all right. And this elk pauses for a moment, and I shoot, and it just, perfect shot, right behind the shoulder. It takes like three more steps and then dumps over. And so all the rest of the elk that were bulls, they just take off. So we hike down this steep, nasty canyon across the other side in the snow, and we get up there, and we realize that, you know, something's wrong here. This elk has this giant body. And then we notice on the left side, it's got this big clump of black growth, you know, where the antler would be. And the other side has like this 6-inch, I guess you'd call it an antler, but it looks like a rotten cucumber, black, sticking up. It's about 6 inches long. So, I mean, technically this animal had antlers. And so I'm like, oh no, you know what? What are we going to do? You know, but this is weird. And we start looking at it, and this elk has a scrotum, but no testicles.
Oh shit.
It has female teat. So it was a hermaphrodite elk.
Oh, real. That's unreal.
It was just nuts. But I mean, it probably thought he was a bull because he was hanging with the bulls, and it had a body as big as any of the bulls in that group. And so what I did, I took a couple of pictures, and I called the game warden's office and said, hey, we saw this animal. We couldn't see any antlers. We walk up. It has these really weird, nasty looking things where the antlers should be. And I sent pictures, and they were like, oh, man, you're totally great. Thanks for taking that one out of the herd, you know?
Yeah.
And but that was a fun experience, you know, getting that thing out in the deep snow. And I mean, to this day, I don't think I personally have seen another, you know, hermaphrodite type.
That's crazy. Deer,
elk or whatever. But it, yeah, it was, I mean, that thing must have been a 12, 13 year old animal as big as it was.
That's nuts. I had a buddy of mine kill a deer, a whitetail, and I think it was either Georgia or South Carolina or something like that, that had, basically like the similar thing. He thought it was a doe, and it ended up being having, like you said, a scrotum, no nuts. And I want to say it may have, I don't know, I might be wrong, but I think he told me it had a vagina too, which is like, it had both. Like, I don't know, but it was really fucked up.
The game warden told me it wasn't the first time he'd heard of it, but it was pretty dang rare to, you know, to have to have it happen and actually see one in person.
Yeah,
the meat tasted fine, so that's
yeah,
that's all I cared about at that point.
Right?
Yeah.
That's nuts. Anyway, well, cool, man. I hope you and your daughter have a good hunt, and she finds some success. And
appreciate that. Yeah, we're gonna go out and have a good time regardless. She's excited. She texted me right before we got on, just telling me how excited she was, and she's working with her teachers to make sure it's okay to miss a few days of school. And she's 15. I have three daughters actually. And
oh wow, who are you?
I have an 18, a 15, and a 13-year-old daughter. And she's the one that likes to hunt with me the most. She's a 15-year-old, and she's killed deer before, and this will be her first elk hunt. So I don't know that I've been this excited for a hunt in a long time, and which is weird for me because it's an elk hunt, and I'm excited about the deer hunt. But I'm excited for her. It'll be fun.
My 10-year-old daughter has a coos deer tag. Her and her mom both drew, so I'm kind of excited. I pretty much forewent. Is that even a word? I didn't hunt here in Arizona during the early archery season. The couple of days that I had to hunt, I basically went out and scouted for them. And that's mainly because I had a Nevada tag too, so I went to Nevada. But
so do you have a 10-year-old daughter? Do you have any other kids?
Yeah, I do. I have an 8-year-old daughter and I have a 3-year-old son. So
I'll tell you why that, and you'll probably know this. There's nothing. I have a lot more stories we could talk about, but if I was going to share one more, I would probably be about what it's like to hunt with your kids. You know, it's just something special when you get your daughter out there on this hunt. You know, it's when my daughter's been successful. I've had two of my daughters that have shot deer now, and I mean, it's amazing. In fact, this daughter that's 15,
mm-hmm.
This is a funny story. She was five years old, and she was just begging me to take her hunting.
Nice.
This was a year that it was the rifle season. My brother and I had been chasing a handful of really nice bucks, and it's midweek, and she's just take me out, Dad, just take me out. My wife says, just take her, you know, go for a little evening hike. Maybe you'll see a doe or whatever. And just so we were living in southern Utah at the time, so we just leave town and we hike up in this area where I know I can usually at least find deer. And it's cold, it's windy, I'm trying to keep her warm. And she starts complaining that she has these thorns in her socks and in her shoes. And so I bend down to try to, you know, get these thorns out and see if I can get her comfortable again. And while I'm doing that, she says, Dad, is that a deer up there on the hill? And I look over about 130 yards away, and there's this little 2x3 buck. And so I'm like, yeah, it is. It's a buck. You know, good spot. You know, that was awesome. And she's like, Daddy, just shoot it. So here I am with that debate. You know, do I make a memory with my daughter? Or do I pull that and maybe chase these bigger bucks my brother and I have been going after? And I decided, she convinced me, you know, I decided to shoot the deer, and I shoot it. It goes down. We get over there, and I actually didn't come in prepared to take a deer, like, out quartered or deboned or anything. I didn't have the right pack on me that day. And so I got this deer, and we're about a mile and a half from the truck. And halfway back to the truck, there's this super steep, basically a dry creek bed, but super steep on both sides. You know, one of those areas where it'll flash flood if you get the right rain. And I start dragging this deer out, and it's maybe a 2-year-old deer, but you know, after I've drug it 3/4 of a mile and I'm to this steep canyon, and it took me probably 15 minutes to get it up the other side, and it was probably only, you know, 50 yards straight uphill. And
all I remember is her. She said, "Dad, you remember that cartoon we watched when the little engine that could?" She's like, "Just tell yourself, I think I can. And so she was there motivating me, you know, and I finally got it up and out of there, and the rest was pretty flat back to the truck. And I get back to the truck, and just in time as another guy's coming down the hill, and he helps me throw it in the bed of the truck, and off we go. And she didn't stop talking about that hunt for weeks. I mean, it was weeks, you know. She called it her deer because she's the one that spotted it.
Nice.
And I really think that experience right there has led us to where we are this week, because if I hadn't made that memory with her, she may not have been excited
started the
as fun. She is to go out and be with me and hunt. And so, you know, maybe that's a lesson learned for those of us that have kids is, you know, sometimes it is more important to make a memory than, you know, to kill the biggest animal on the mountain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we need to get our kids involved. It's, you know, the number of youth really getting involved in hunting is sure taking a downward trend.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I actually got an opportunity to, my daughter Ella, she took her first animal with the, she shot a hog with a crossbow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was pretty fun. So hopefully we'll be able to get her something on this coos deer hunt. It's not, it's a unit that I know very well, and I know where to find deer, but the shots are all kind of longer and it's kind of thick. So it's kind of hard to sneak close enough to make a shot. So you're better off just shooting across canyon or whatever, you know. So that's the only thing. Coos deer are difficult to find in the scope. I had that problem with adults all the time that come to hunt with us. You know, that's like my number one thing with clients. So I'm
target acquisition is sometimes hard for new hunters.
Yeah. So I hoping this will be, it won't be bad, because I'm going to try to get her out here when I get back from this, elk hunt and go and practice acquiring targets and, you know, out in the field. So, but we'll see.
That's awesome, man.
So, well, cool, man.
I can't wait to see the result of that hunt.
And your daughter too.
I think my wife, she's told me already that she's going to shoot a bigger buck than I have. So, I think what, between the two of them, we should at least get one. If not both, two. But I got some bucks picked out. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, find them a big one.
Anyway. Well, man, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you sharing your stories with us and taking the time during your busy season here. And, you know, like I said, I hope that all goes well with the daughter. I would like to know. Keep me in the loop. Tag me in your post when you guys knock one down. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case. And I'll definitely do that. I appreciate you inviting me on, John.
Absolutely. Have a good one. And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk later. See you.
Hey guys, if you're looking for a really good hunt, every year, my outfitting service, Days in the Wild, we take out a handful of clients for deer and javelina in the archery season and rifle seasons here. It's too late to get a rifle tag now for deer, but the draw is opening for javelina, and if you want to get a rifle tag for javelina, or you'd like to come out and do a combination archery javelina hunt, archery deer and javelina hunt, give me a shout. Hit me up on Instagram or Facebook or hit me up on the blog, or go to our website, daysinthewild.com, and contact us through there. We can talk about it and build you your hunt of your, I don't know, I want to say of your dreams, but definitely an awesome time and lots of action and really true Western experience, where you're getting to do a lot of spot and stalk, getting to navigate the mountains. It's a good time, great weather that time of year. Most of our hunts take place in December and January for the deer and javelina combination. And if you're coming just for javelina, those are typically in February. So give us a shout, and we'll put together a great hunt for you. Thanks.